Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
Why is it that sometimes we would love to hang out with people we know are horrifying human beings?
We always have an odd one in the crowd,
so it's kind of odd.
Decidedly odd.
Doesn't that strike you as a little bit odd?
No, that doesn't strike me as a little bit odd.
It's the Bob and Sherry Oddcast, with stuff we wouldn't, couldn't, or shouldn't do on the regular show. Now, here's the Oddcast.
So I guess everybody knows that Succession has come to a conclusion. It's over. I was very early on watching the show. After three episodes, I almost said, I can't watch this. And here's why. There are famously no nice people in the cast. Well, the cast as human beings are nice, but the characters are horrifying. Each one is worse than the other. You keep looking for somebody to pull for. There's no one to pull for. They're all a bunch of backstabbing rats. And I have right now, and I want to get to something about the appeal of this show and some other shows, and maybe your life, the appeal of hanging around these people. I want to start out, this is right off of CNN's website. They collected some of the best lines of one family member cutting another. And even if you don't know the characters, just stay with it. You'll appreciate the artistry. Greg to Tom about Logan. He's just moseying. Terrifyingly moseying. He's wearing sunglasses inside. He looks as if Santa Claus is a hitman. Connor to his siblings. The good thing about having a family that doesn't love you is you learn to live without it. Roman to Waystar Studios head Joy. Los Angeles. It's an incredibly involved, ruthlessly segregated city you've built here on a geological fault. Tom to Shiv, this is husband to wife. I think that you're incapable of love, and I think you are maybe not a good person to have children. That was right after she became pregnant. Roman,
who doesn't love that they named the character Shiv?
Shiv,
it's like I
adored it. It's fantastic. Chevron, I think, was the long version, but that's all they called her was Shiv. Roman to his pregnant sister, Shiv. Is it mine? He's such a rat, a little rat. Matson to Greg. I thought you were the backwash at the bottom of the gene pool, but this is something else. Logan to Carl. Carl, if your hands are clean, it's only because your whorehouse also does manicures.
Oh.
Kendall on a conference call. Well, little Lord Fuck Leroy has joined the call.
Oh, my. It's a good nickname.
That just cracks me up. Shiv, describing her mother's female reproductive organ. Cold and inhospitable. That seems to check it out. Tom to Greg. I'd castrate you and marry you in a heartbeat.
Ew.
You and to his brother Logan. The Logan Roy School of Journalism? What's next? The Jack the Ripper Women's Health Clinic? Hugo to Shiv about Tom. What is it like being married to a man with two assholes? And I'll wind it up with this one here. Jerry to Roman. You're pathetic. You are a revolting little worm, aren't you? You little slime puppy. And it was like that for episode after episode after episode. And yet, I'm sitting there, and part of the appeal, of course, is these people you know, it's based on the Murdoch. They're incredibly rich, incredibly powerful media family. They've got hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's all on the line, and they all want to control it. But there's not a lot of good about any of them, as I've mentioned, and yet you get drawn in, and you kind of would like, if it were real life and you were all of a sudden inserted into a movie, they're so interesting and they're so glib, you kind of would like to hang out with them a little bit. And I felt the same way about The Sopranos. And people would go up to Gandolfini and they would say, "Tony, I love you. I love you, man." And he would say, "I play a psychotic murderer. Are you kidding me?" We'll continue with more. I want to continue on this line in just a moment. Stay right there. It's Bob and Sherry.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
We're back with the Bob and Sherry Oddcast, and we are talking about two television shows, The Sopranos, and then also, well, we could actually make it three, Seinfeld and Succession, where all of the characters, admittedly, are really not very nice people. I mean, even in Seinfeld, they said, you know, none of us are really nice people. We're very selfish people. And yet, when you watch these shows, if you become an aficionado of one of them, and I was of all three, you kind of would have liked to hang out with them a little bit. I mean, I don't want to kill anybody on the streets of Jersey, but those guys ate such great food. They were so funny. They had such attitude, and they didn't miss a trick. Why is that, that we want to be around miserable people?
I think it's human nature to be fascinated by the dark side. Especially if you yourself are not a person who is unscrupulous or amoral. Yeah, like we're all flawed, right? Anybody mm-hmm. can be a complete clown. Mm-hmm. But if you yourself are a pretty decent person who plays by the rules, you get up every day, you go to work, you take care of your family, you do your best. Yeah, your best mm-hmm. is kind of crappy some days, but you're doing your best. There's an attraction to people that don't seem bound by conscience or rules or morality. There's a fascination with watching what it looks like when people just do whatever they want.
I think
consequences
right.
be damned. And
I
for
think
me,
you
the,
are right.
the family in Succession, what I always thought watching was, this is a great like object lesson in why you shouldn't covet generational wealth, because it poisons the well for generations. And there's a chance that what you'll get in exchange for that wealth and that incredible apartment and those understated, flawless cashmere clothes, you'll have to trade your soul for it. And that's what Succession always made me think watching it. Like, yeah, I like watching these awful people just stab each other in the back. And I'm glad I'm not one of them. I'm glad my life didn't play out that way.
Yeah, but there's still that appeal of wanting to sit outside of the pork restaurant in Jersey and get a little suntan while you eat this delicious pork sandwich with these guys. And they all have a smart mouth. I think that's part of it. There's just a fascination with watching some people with a smart mouth and clothes that are kind of over the top.
When I was a kid, and so a teenager actually, when I was a teenager and my father got mobbed up and was breaking the law right and left, I was the only person in my immediate family that was repulsed by it. His sister... The idea that you have proximity to power, that you know a secret, that mm-hmm. you're on the inside of something, even if it's something disgusting, Mm-hmm. That is really appealing. There's something about human nature, and I'm not sure what it is inside of us as creatures, where we're attracted to that. And, you know, there are the people that do the evil, and then there are the people that don't actually get their hands dirty, but they facilitate the evil doing. You can see this all throughout history. The Third Reich was a classic example of this, right? And then there are the people that enjoy the fruits of the evil while holding themselves separate from the actual doing of the evil so that they can justify it in their own heads. And I watched all of that play out in my family, all of it. And it was really upsetting to me as a kid to see adults that I loved being so caught up in stuff that was so freaking gross and wrong.
Yeah.
But there's an attraction that we all have to it. And it's like my attraction to The Sopranos was, I want to come to Sunday dinner. I want to be invited when Carmen and Tony cook out in the backyard. Like I want in on that. The food is good. The conversation's great. It's fun. But I also know too well that you can't stay too close to those kind of people for too long, because you can get compromised in the blink of an eye.
You know what I think? I think you touched on it just a few minutes ago. Part of the appeal, whether it's the Roy family or it's the Soprano family, part of the appeal is these people live without normal rules. They are, in essence, freer than a lot of us. And I was reading about beatniks out of the 1950s when Allen Ginsberg was writing Howl. And hanging out with Kerouac, who wrote On the Road, of course, and Marlon Brando, who would show up late for an audition and wouldn't even bother looking at the script, give him what he had, and then just walk out and didn't give a damn whether or not anybody liked it. There was a certain freedom that these people said, we totally reject American norms. We don't care what you think of us. And back in the 1950s, that was a harder thing to do. When Eisenhower was president, it was just a much more white shirt, straight lace sort of society. To say that, I'll bathe when I'm going to bathe. I'm going to crash on a friend of mine's couch. I'm not going to have a house. I'm going to borrow a car that may or may not be mine. Just leading this bohemian lifestyle that was wrong in many ways, and yet the appeal for people to watch Brando, to listen to Ginsberg at a coffee house, and to read On the Road, the appeal for straight-laced people was very, very strong, because they may be wrong and may be naughty and all of that, and way more than naughty with The Sopranos, but they are living free. And I have to get up every morning, put on the uniform, and go off and be told what to do.
Yeah, it's like you're living a sucker's life.
Yeah.
You're playing by the rules. And these people, I can tell you again, from being close to it, there's a reason why the bad guys are often the most popular characters in the movie, because they're having a better time. And there's something attractive and appealing about breaking the rules and being on the inside and having a secret. And I think that people sometimes get, there's always the brains of the operation, but there's always ever one brains of the operation and then a bunch of stooges that actually do the dirty work. I think sometimes, and we see this a lot when we do Morons in the News on the regular show, I think sometimes people who are not really bad, not evil, and not necessarily really criminal or sociopathic, I think they get caught up in things and they become the stooge who does the dirty work for the brains of the operation. Because it's so, like that whole moth to the flame thing, it's so appealing to be close to something that's forbidden.
And it's hard to walk away from something that is giving you great pleasure. Like there were many scenes in The Sopranos when Mrs. Soprano knew exactly what was going on at the Bada Bing Club. but she would never really bring it up.
That was a different code. That was a different code.
Address it completely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole different code.
Carmela would never really bring it up. And if push came to shove, she would protect her gangster husband.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she loved the house and she loved the Mercedes-Benz and the travel with her friend to Paris.
Here's the thing. Everybody, when you talk about Sopranos, everybody talks about, you know, Tony and Polly Walnuts and Big Puss. And Carmela was every bit as morally compromised as a character.
She was.
Just yeah. because she didn't have literal blood on her hands.
Right.
Right? That, right. You know, oh, well, you want to make excuses for it. She knew full well what the what was. And she was absolutely on board. Did she like the fact that Tony was, as she put it, with his hooers? No. She understood that was part of the deal. She knew he was a killer. She knew he was a thief. She knew he was a con man. She knew he was a psycho. And yet, that was the price of admission for the lifestyle. Yeah.
Right. She liked the power. But when she went to lunch with the other girls, they all knew who was the number one female in that whole universe. And she liked that very much.
And she knew that she did not. None of that was really hers. And there's a great scene in The Sopranos that shows you the foundation of the deal with the devil that Carmela made.
Can I guess what you're going to say? Can I guess what you're going to say? Which scene it was? Is it the scene where the daughter, Meadow, wants to get into Columbia and Carmela takes a lasagna to the admissions officer who's saying no?
No. Mm-mm. Here's the scene. Big Puss has become a rat. He's become an informant, and Tony finds out. So Tony takes Big Puss, his best friend from childhood, out on the boat, and he kills him. He assassinates him. And with the end of Big Puss, Big Puss's wife, Angie Bompensero, suddenly finds herself with nothing because all the power, all the wealth, everything came through Big Puss. So Carmela goes to the grocery store.
Oh,
and as she's wheeling her buggy around, there's a woman handing out samples. And Carmela looks and the woman looks and their eyes lock. And it's Puss's widow, Angie. And Carmela makes some kind of half-baked excuse for, oh, I've been meaning to call, blah, blah, blah. And the two women are looking at each other. And everybody knows everything. Angie knows that Big Puss has probably been murdered by Tony. She can't say anything to Carmela. She doesn't dare. Carmela also knows that Big Puss has probably been murdered by her husband and that Angie has been reduced from being, you know, the glamorous mob wife eating at Vesuvio's anytime she wanted at the fancy restaurant to handing out cocktail weenies at the grocery store. And Carmela knows full well that she can be silent and complicit or she can hand out cocktail weenies. And we all know how the choice got made.
Well, she went back to her husband and she said, I need money of my own. We don't know what's going to happen. I need money of my own. And she builds a spec house with her father. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. She saw what the future could be and she decided to hang on to what she had. And yet she still has brunch with the local priest, you know,
and that keeps up that front. That's what makes Carmela one of the most fascinating characters on Sopranos. And Edie Falco gave such the performance of a lifetime. Because when you look at Polly Walnuts and Big Puss and Tony Soprano and Johnny Sack, Christopher, they're gangsters. They're gangsters. They're not ambiguous characters. They have made a deal with the devil and they're honoring that deal. But Carmela is a morally ambiguous and ambivalent character. She is 100% every possible shade of gray. And she has to navigate every single day, every transaction from the biggest to the smallest. She has to decide how much of her soul she's willing to shave off in that moment. It's just a fascinating character. And Carmela, I think, is the stand-in for us, the viewer, because we're very attracted to these charismatic guys. I mean, they're charming raconteurs, right? We're so attracted to Tony. We're so attracted to Paulie. But it's Carmela who shows us what the price of that attraction might be.
And, you know, the attraction to guys like that goes way back, because when Bonnie and Clyde, the real Bonnie and Clyde, were terrorizing the countryside of the Midwest, there were people pulling for them, pulling for them to pull off. And they were murderers. And when they were finally, if you've ever seen the movie, when they were finally killed, and I don't mean the original one with Warren Beatty, the one, what was the one?
With Faye Dunaway?
No, no. The one that was recently on with Woody Harrelson and Kevin Costner.
I can't remember.
It'll come to me in a minute. After they're mowed down by the G-Men, their bodies are brought into the local town, and people are running up just to touch the dead arm, just to touch the blood of Bonnie. Highwaymen, that's the name of the movie. It's a great movie. Because they were, you know what it was back then during the Depression? These were people that said, yeah, we ain't got nothing either like you, but we're going to go get something. And they lived like kings and queens, even though they were on the lam. And I think there were certain people that just said, once again, these people are wrong, but boy, they live a free life. They're free, and I'm not free.
And that kind of story, whether it's a book or a movie, that living vicariously, you yourself, you're not going to rob a bank. You're not going to machine gun a bunch of innocent civilians. You're not going to sell drugs and do human trafficking and all of these awful things. But there's this vicarious pleasure in watching somebody else break the rules. Because there's also the satisfaction of knowing that they're probably going to get caught for it, which is also very satisfying. Because why should people be, it's like this weird calculation we make. Why should I have to get up every day and pay my taxes and grind this out and then die, right? Why do these people get to live like this, and they don't care who they hurt and they don't care what they damage, because you believe in your heart that they're going to get caught and there'll be justice. And they got away with it for a little while, but they ain't going to get away with it forever.
Yeah. It's just the appeal of the bad boy and the bad girl. It's just always been there, I guess. Well, anyway, I don't know what I'm going to watch next, because all my shows have finished up. Thank you very much for joining us for the Bob and Sherry Oddcast. We do it every week.
Twice a week, actually.
Twice a week.
On Friday, we'll have this next episode of Talking Lamar, along with a brand new True Weird Stuff. And this Friday on True Weird Stuff, we're talking about time travel. We have a couple of time travel stories. People who claim they're visiting us from the past. Ooh, we'll see what you think about that. Thank you so much for listening to the Oddcast. You are the reason we make it. Our website is bobandsherry.com. We'll see you next time. Hey, thank you so much for listening to the Bob and Sherry Podcast and the Bob and Sherry Oddcast. We would love if you would subscribe, rate and review, and share it with a friend on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you go. And thank you again for listening.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds, because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.